Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Good morning, I'm Marcus Session, Vice President of Information Technology Services at Pampa International Airport.
Marcus, thanks so much for joining us today on the Ivy Podcast. I appreciate you finding time on the holiday week, everyone, taking the time off. So it's great for us to connect. Tell us a little bit more about your background, your current role, what falls under your purview.
Well, I've been in IT for over 20 years. Sounds a little weird saying that, but don't feel like it's been that long. But yeah, I've been there over 20 years. I've worked in a variety of industries, healthcare research, higher education, obviously aviation, transportation industry. Done some consulting on the side. I teach. So a lot of different areas. My current role, I'm responsible for, all the technology initiatives and obviously information security at Tampa International Airport, America's favorite airport, by the way. That's what it is. It's America's living room there. Basically anything we're trying to do from a technology perspective, coming up with a strategy, working with departments and our partners to help technology bring value to the organization and help us put forward our missions and goals. But most importantly, if I had to sum it up, is using technology to provide a great and robust customer experience. We want you to come through Tampa and not just remember your visit at the beach or wherever you're going, but also remember that, hey, we have a great airport too.
Oh, that's super exciting. I don't get a chance to talk to a lot of, I talk to a lot of CIOs, CTOs, different companies. But this is the first time, I'm connecting with someone who's in charge of, the aviation, the airport, kind of from that industry perspective. So I'm super excited. Tell us, so you mentioned, briefly around strategy and, the need to continuously innovate. I would imagine that's all, at the core for you guys. Mm-hmm. As far as building and fostering that culture of innovation, not only in IT, but organization in general, to share with us any strategies or initiatives that you have in place that really help you kind of build that and foster that culture of innovation.
It's interesting the way you asked your question. You kind of said a very good answer that I think people need to think about. You said foster culture of innovation, not just in IT, but the organization. And that's the key. So what I try to do is, I try to come, from the organization perspective of including everybody. So if you think about it, a lot of organizations, the ideas are top down, or you have one or two superstars or whatever it is, or everybody has their own different format. What we try to do is we try to cultivate ideas from everybody, but it's hard to do that sometimes. So as a leader, what ends up happening, if you say, and every leader's seen this, you sit in a room and you say, all right, look, hey, anybody got any ideas for things we can move forward? Well, most people are going to sit there and say, well, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just ready to get out of this meeting. When's lunch? Hey, is Chick-fil-A open? And so, you don't get that feedback because people just haven't been, aren't comfortable talking or, don't feel they've been enabled or like, hey, I'm just, let me collect my check and do my thing. So what we try to do is we try to meet people that they are, where they are, and give them as many opportunities as possible to submit ideas, get input, get feedback, and constantly challenge them and ask questions and challenge assumptions. Even challenging my own assumptions, if we're rolling something out and say, hey, what do you guys think? I know someone in here doesn't maybe like the idea, think it's perfect. Is it perfect? Mm-hmm. And you kind of put that to people, and we let people through multiple channels submit ideas. And we take those ideas under consideration and we talk about them in open forum. So if someone isn't, comfortable bringing up for an idea, they can submit it through this, I call them an anonymous channel. And then that question will come up and we'll talk about it. Right. And then that way they get their idea debated without, having to sort of be the face of it, because everybody doesn't want necessarily to be in the limelight, but they do maybe want to affect change. Right. And the second part to that is including the entire organization. When I first got there, I met with everybody. I probably had, I did 30 minute to 1 hour meetings with every leader in the organization that I could, kind of meet with.
Right.
And I probably had 70 hours worth of meetings in the first like month, couple months or whatever, and being there. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to learn about everybody's perspective, how they felt about IT, how they felt about technology, how it intersected. And part of that too was also me laying that groundwork of my plan for what I wanted in terms of building technology as a tool for them and not just something, well, IT is just implementing this thing. So building the ownership in and that, hey, I could use IT as a tool. So mm-hmm. as we did that and people saw the value in it, they started getting things they wanted, then they started coming forward with more ideas.
Right.
And so having that plan and laying that foundation early with those relationships is what kind of allowed it to happen. And then now, not centralizing it, we're centralizing our innovation and we're kind of having an innovation program, have somebody that's kind of over that function that's within our HR department. That person is kind of the person that's going to be organizing the innovation efforts. That way, it's not just a technology-based thing. It's not just, hey, Marcus just won't spend another $1 million. It's, you know, it's more about anybody can submit something.
Right. No, absolutely. And, you know, I like what you said in terms of typically it's, you know, this top-down approach. And, you know, from a standpoint of innovation, it's really empowering and creating this, you know, almost autonomous environment for anybody to feel, you know, empowered, not only to bring ideas to life, but also have the resources and the support of, you know, the leadership to actually take that idea and work on it, prove that it works, you know, prove that it's going to bring value. And from there on out to actually bring that idea to life as far as, you know, getting that implemented, you know, whether at organization level, department level, and so forth, because that then sends the right message to everybody across the organization that, yeah, you know, it's not just being done for, you know, for PR type of, you know, initiatives, that the ideas definitely do get considered, that a lot of ideas actually that have been brought up did get a chance to, you know, implement it. So I think that's, you know, those are great examples that you're providing. Thank you for that. So from your standpoint, just curious, and it doesn't have to be in your industry, doesn't have to be, you know, in related to your company. I like to ask this question in terms of what are the different ideas or trends that really excite you these days? Like, what are you researching? Like when you're not working, or even when you are working, for that something you observe, something that you think will be the next big thing. What is that? Share with us what's on Marcus's mind these days.
Well, it's a lot, right? Christmas gifts. So if you think about it, I like to call it digital transformation 2.0. You know, somebody's probably coined the phrase as we do in IT, but I'm going to go ahead and just coin it. Digital transformation 2.0. It's part of this fourth industrial revolution that, you know, Andrew Yang, if you listen to Andrew Yang, you know, talked about. Basically, it's automation of everything, you know. And if you think about it like this, with the whole thing with the pandemic and COVID and the way the work styles have changed, what's ended up happening is that people are now working in ways they never thought they would 9-10 months ago. And a lot of companies, you know, CIOs, their sort of 3 to 5 year plan was done in this last 9 month period during the pandemic. You know, people are like, well, we're trying to get more cloud, or we're trying to get people to, you know, use more of the digital tools and things of that nature. Well, you had to turn that switch with COVID. And so now it's kind of like, well, wait a minute, I've just done my, you know, my digital plan here. What is next? So that's why I call it digital transformation 2.0, because now you have people in the digital tools. Hey, guess what we found out? Surprisingly, everybody that resists, people are really comfortable when they have motivation to move to the tools, and they surprisingly can learn how to use them, right? So all those barriers went out the window. And what most people have found is they like it. Mm-hmm. Now, the people that you know didn't like it before now like it. So for me, the exciting thing is, how do I now take these tools to the next level, mm-hmm. integrate them, automate functions, get more business value out of them? You know, you talk about things like RPA, you know, which is a big thing, right? Robotic process automation. And the biggest thing about it, and the biggest thing that I'm looking at, is now taking all these things, and I call the stuff that it's half off the shelf. Mm-hmm. You have, most organizations have tools that they've half implemented. And those tools are sitting there and like, well, we'll get back to it. Yeah, we still have to finish that project. We have to finish this project. Oh, man, we're going to integrate. This is going to be wonderful. Trust me. Hey, you're going to get that report. All your reports in a single pane of glass. You're going to get that nice dashboard eventually, right? That's IT, right?
Yeah.
Digital transformation 2.0, you've now done the base level. Mm-hmm. Now you can look at those data sets and now bring those into the digital tools because you now have people using the tools. There's somebody that can get value there now. So now you have an incentive to actually implement those tools and finish those projects. Mm-hmm. So looking at the automation piece and bringing everything forward, and it is one thing specific to my industry in automation, we're trying to automate sort of the passenger flow aspect of it to provide a seamless journey. You know, a combination of using apps and physical tools and signage and different things to give you a better experience in the airport and to traverse you through the airport, because airports are confusing and stressful for people. So we want to give people tools in their hands, mobile apps on their phones, maybe so they can look and say, oh, hey, I'm in the airport here. Oh, hey, look, you know, I'd love to eat at this place, but where is it? And it takes you with a blue dot technology over to that spot. And oh, by the way, it tells you where the bathrooms are and it gives you a notice. Hey, security takes this long. So your flight leaves here and you need to leave for the gate from where you are in this at this period of time to make your flight on time.
Right.
So those things all come from taking data and existing tools and bring them together to provide a robust experience.
Well, that's pretty cool. Those are great examples. You know, I was wondering kind of the latest trends and innovation, especially from that airport experience, because, you know, yes, some airports do a really great job at this, but some, you know, it's a painful process. Mm-hmm. And you're right, as far as that being a stressful experience in terms of going in and really not knowing what to expect. So anything that technology can do to help, at least to prepare the passenger for what's coming, or, you know, any type of predictive, you know, suggestions and stuff like that, I think that's, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for improvement. So,
and one other thing too, John, I didn't really mention biometrics. That's another thing that's out there that kind of goes in the automation piece. But the thing why I don't always mention biometrics, because we're still to the point where it still scares people in the next day. You still have these people, oh, my privacy, and all these different things like that. That's another thing that's on the horizon that's maybe it's here. It's being used in certain applications. But how it's going to be used in the future, there's a lot of ideas, but there's not a consensus just yet. So that's another thing that's maybe a little further out in terms of becoming kind of a household thing. I still think there's some conversation needs to happen.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And would you say that, you know, kind of airlines and airport, you know, airports specifically in terms of being a little bit slower to adapt new technologies, or do you consider, you know, airports to be a little bit more advanced from that standpoint? Where would you say, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, artificial intelligence, you know, a lot about machine learning. And I would imagine that's going to take its, you know, its place in airports as well at some point to, you know, automate, like you said, a lot of the processes and a lot of the things that we have to go through, you know, going through the airport experience. What's your take on that, just in general, from that standpoint, being able to adopt such technologies?
So we have a saying in the aviation industry, at least with the airports, that says, once you've seen one airport, you've seen one airport. Mm-hmm. airports are designed with this idea that it brings a certain sense of the city or area it's in. So, you know, you want this flavor. So you walk into LAX, you're going to get kind of an LA feel to it. That's at least kind of the purpose, right? You walk into our airport, you want to feel like you're in Tampa. You want to get a sense of the city, you know, a sense of the area, right? So the airports very much so are very different and vastly different, you know, from a technology portfolio perspective as well. So in terms of innovation, you have some that are very forward-thinking, very on the cusp, very cutting edge. And you have some that, you know, are laggards and they kind of, you know, come, you know, very late to the party. And a lot of it depends on just sometimes the airport leadership, how they're funded. Because obviously, you know, we did, you know, about record of almost 23 million passengers last year. Wow. So that's a, you know, pretty good number, you know. But, you know, you have, you know, LAX, you know, doing, you know, 80 to 100 million passengers a year, right? You have Atlanta airport doing over 100 million passengers a year, right? So there's different economies of scale, there's different structures. So it does depend on that very heavily.
Right.
But there's some airports, I would say, a good chunk, in what we call a large hub category, which is kind of large category. We're considered a large hub airport. There's about 30-ish that are in that large hub category. I would say, about half of the large hub airports, are really kind of try to stay in the front of pushing things forward. A lot of it out of necessity. Think about it. If you're doing 100 million passengers a year, if you're not trying to find ways to constantly automate and get more efficient, you're going to have some problems, right. and it gets out of hand really quickly, because when people, you probably travel a lot. Mm-hmm. There's certain airports you probably don't want to fly through. Yeah. You're probably like, man, that's connection through there. No, I'm good. I will fly an extra hour and a half around and go somewhere else. Right.
Absolutely.
And so that's what you're trying to avoid. You want people to want to come to your airport. So it is very dependent upon that. And a lot of the times, what we're trying to do, we have an innovation group in the industry that I'm a part of. And, we try to figure out how do we innovate and continue to bring that there, because airports traditionally, to your point, at a base level, do kind of operate a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. Just because you haven't had to think, but aviation hasn't changed in a long time.
Right. I mean, that's what I was getting at. You don't see a lot of complete breakthroughs, or you don't see a lot of constant, at least visible change, mm-hmm. in airports or airlines. And I was just wondering, but that makes sense, what you're talking about and the point that you made across, which I didn't really think about that maybe some airports, actually operate from, that standpoint by design. For example, I don't know, Austin Air, airport that becoming the tech hub. So I'm pretty sure there's also some, strategic plans to make the airport a little bit more, tech advanced from that standpoint. So that's pretty interesting. That's pretty cool. And I never thought about it that way. So for you as an executive, in charge of IT and all of, the information technology for your organization, I'm pretty sure, at the core of your, just being a leader is, surrounding yourself with A players, with the best talent, and whether you're recruiting actively or, passively, I'm pretty sure you're always on the hunt for, the top talent. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit more about your interview style, or, for the candidates that go through the technical assessments, all of those great things, before they get to you, once you sit down with a candidate, give us a glimpse in, of that interview. What do you get creative with your interviews? Do you keep it pretty traditional? And then more importantly, what do you look for in some of the responses when you talk to a candidate?
So what we try to do is we try to have a little bit of the traditional and a little bit of kind of unorthodox methods, if you may. And we're not asking people, hey, how did the egg get into the carton, kind of, mumbo jumbo kind of things like that. But what I try to do is I try to make it, what we want to do is we'll make you comfortable. Uh-huh. I'm a pretty personable person in the sense of I consider myself a people person. And we want you to be comfortable because we want to see what you're like. And, I don't want to call it, wartime or peacetime. But when you come in for an interview, right, it's a big moment for you in a lot of cases. You got your suit on. You may have not worn a suit for years. So we want you to relax. So we try to relax you, try to make it the environment feel a bit more casual than it typically is. Try to do a lot of laughing. A lot of comedy to loosen people up. Because what I want to do is I want to see who you are, who the person is, kind of behind the representative, as we like to call them. Because truthfully, I try to look for soft skills and some of those intangibles a little bit more than technical skills. Because 9 times out of 10, I put a job out there, I'm going to get 300 resumes in a lot of cases, right? And I'm going to lay and everybody's going to, hey, they're going to be certified. They're going to have all these technical skills. Awesome, right? But the differentiator is fit. Do you fit in the organization? Is the Aviation Authority or Tampa International Airport someplace that you would want to work and that you want to come be a part of this team?
Right.
And so that's really how we do it. So I try to, I'll ask questions, just about, hey, well, what was your biggest failure, and how did you overcome it, right? And in that question, people will just be like, oh, well, one time I had this tough customer, or I was writing this piece of code, or this things like that, right? In that question, you get to hear how people solve a problem. You get to hear how people are detail-oriented. And then I'll throw addendum to that, right? Because what I like to do, I guess, you know, my differentiator is I like to go down a rabbit hole, because people work for those first line questions.
Yeah.
They don't work for the drill down because they don't know what it's going to be. So then I'll say, well, how'd the customer feel? How'd that person feel when you solved a problem, or what were their feelings? Like, what were you detecting, right? Now I'm digging into their thought process. Did they show empathy? You know, did they think about the customer, right? And you can kind of tell, you know, a natural reaction versus someone saying, oh, crap, I didn't think about it. Let me make it up. So we try to do it like, you know, a question I've asked is, you know, hey, if your significant other or family member or your wife or whatnot was sitting right there, what would they say the number one thing you need to work on is? And most people are prepared for that question of, hey, what's my weakness? But now they have to think about, hey, wait a minute, what would my wife say, or this and that, right?
It's a
very different question. Sometimes you don't know the answer.
Oh, great, because, you know, it's so awesome. I love, like, personally, because, you know, for us at ProSource, that's, you know, that's our bread and butter. We partner with organizations of, you know, different size to work on, you know, very niche advanced, you know, IT skill set. We help them find, onboard, and recruit, and all of that great stuff. And one of the things that, you know, I used to be on the other side of the table where I was the hiring manager. And to your point, one of my favorite questions of all time was also kind of in the sense where you're asking, but not from the spouse perspective, but in the sense that, hey, if I was to call your current manager or the previous manager, like, what do you think they will say is your greatest weakness? Mm-hmm. So it also kind of allows you, you know, to see kind of that level of detail that a candidate is actually hearing, the what are you asking?
Yep.
A lot of times they jump straight to like, oh, my weakness is this, but no, that's not what I asked.
Exactly.
I love that. Yeah. That's
such. Another thing I ask people too, it throws people off. And I've talked to people after about their reactions, and the way they interpret the question is very interesting. Okay. I say, well, so what are you going to do if you don't get the job? And I just look at them, and then they're like, oh. they're not prepared for that answer, because I'm asking you basically, what are you going to do if you fail, right? You came in here to look for a job, you didn't get it. What was your next step? And a lot of people just don't think about it, and so it gets an interesting response. And it's funny because you know, I've had to do this for internal positions where, you know, people that currently work for me and people that are working, they're trying to get a different position.
Uh-huh.
And then after just talking to people, like, you know, when you asked me that, I knew I wasn't getting the job. And I said, well, no, that's not really what, that wasn't the intent of the question. It wasn't predetermined that you weren't getting it. Mm-hmm. I want to know, did you just apply for this job
mm-hmm.
because it's there?
Right.
Or is this part of a bigger plan for you in a personal development goal? Like, why do you want it? You know, like what is going to drive you? Because if you're saying, well, if I don't get it, you know, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, I'm happy, I'm fine. Well, that's telling me that you're not really, you know, you're just kind of doing it because it's there. And that's not necessarily going to preclude you from getting it. What that's going to tell me is that you just kind of, you don't have a plan. You're not super motivated. You're kind of just rolling into the next thing, which is fine. You may still be qualified. You may still get the job, but it's great to know people's motivations because. And if I can get at that, if I can glean enough of that information from other questions, because I can ask you directly, what's your motivation? You may not really tell me the truth.
Exactly.
So yeah. I got to glean some of that stuff from other ways. So that's kind of how I try to approach it. I try to relax people and get them to be the true self. Mm-hmm. And then I try to get as much information as I can to really get a sense of the person. Because like I said, technical skills,
of course.
We can train. A lot of people are great technically, yeah. You know, but I want to know how they problem solve, you know, and any intangibles and sort of soft skills.
No, that's great. You know, at the end of the day, I talk to a lot of executives, you know, on a daily basis, different size of companies and all that. And it all boils down to kind of exactly what you're talking about. The overall message is that at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's also an opportunity for a candidate to interview me as an executive. It's, you know, what are they stepping into? And also allows me, what you're talking about, to get to know them a little bit on a personal level, who they are as a person. And try to at least through that very short conversation to see if, you know, there's a potential fit into the type of culture that we have at, you know, at our organization. So that's pretty exciting, you know, and as a joke, I always say for our listeners, if you're going to be interviewing with Marcus, you have some insider information.
There you go. Now I got to switch the questions up.
Yeah, exactly. You know what to expect. Thank me later if you get the job.
Yeah.
The kind of the follow-up question I have for you is, from, I guess, from the airline and airport industry, from that standpoint, it's not something that we hear, you know, on daily basis, that it's, you know, the industry where a lot of, at least from IT perspective, you know, that's kind of the almost the household industry for a lot of, you know, software engineers and developers, you know, to be in. From your standpoint, what strategies or initiatives that you deploy to really attract the top talent? Something that's really, really hard to find, the guys that are not sitting on the bench, you know, really unicorns. What are some of the strategies that work for you?
So for me, it's be visible and being able to tell our story, right? Like you said, you know, I'm the first person, you know, from the aviation industry to interview. And so I try to get out there. I'm president of an organization called Society for Information Management, SIM. You may have heard of it before. It's a nationwide program. So I'm the president of the chapter for Tampa Bay. So I participate in a lot of events there. Nice. We've partnered with HMG Strategy, which is another organization that puts on IT events. I've done some events with them. I'm doing podcasts with you, right, to get the brand and the thing out there. Because when you, the interesting part of it is, no one in IT, for the most part, and me included, never woke up in the morning and said, you know what, I'm going to apply for a job at an airport for IT.
That's what I was getting at.
You know, and so you just don't think it's there. And right. When I took over, one of the first things, you know, I decided to do was transform the organization. Look, it has a great brand. Tampa International Airport has a great brand. Like if you're coming through Tampa and people start talking, if you talk to people who travel to airports a lot, they're always talking about us. We're always one of the top, you know, one, two, or three rated airports for customer satisfaction. You know, so in the aviation industry, we're well known. But outside of that, you know, it's one of these things of you don't travel a lot, if you know, you don't fly to this region of the country, things like that. You know, you've heard of maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, things like that, other things that the city may be known for, but you never, that airport doesn't come up. So I try to get out there and be present, you know, and we try to do, we use innovation to do that. Like one of the things, our CEO has been on multiple news stations, NBC and different things like that, because we were one of the first airports in the country, if not the first airport, to do COVID testing in the terminal. And that was an innovation that we came up with because we want to be a forward-thinking innovation. Uh-huh. We know that right now, in order to get the traffic back and get the industry back on its feet, we have to make people comfortable traveling. And the way you're going to be comfortable traveling, yeah, you know, airlines are telling you to wear a mask and all those other things, but let's be honest, you're getting into a cramped plane with, you know, 150 of your best friends, right? Depending on the size of the plane. So you're breathing the same air and all those other things. So there's a certain level of you know, tense, like I said, it's already a stressful experience. I got to go through security. I got to get my bag. Now you got to throw masks and pandemic and germs and hand sanitizer and wipes and all that stuff on top of that, right?
Yeah.
If we can say you can get tested before you get on the flight. Mm-hmm. Now, some places require you to get tested. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those things. It's like, wow, I would have never thought to do that. Oh, this place in Tampa is doing that. That brings recognition to the airport. And obviously me being president of the industry, being a part of SIM, being doing those kind of things. Because the brand, once you learn about us, we're doing a lot of things. We've got a lot of experiences. A lot of that just kind of sells itself. You know, so for me, it's telling that IT story. We never got out and told the story. And so I've been out telling our story and telling the things that we're doing and what we're doing and we're doing fun and innovative things here as well. And truthfully, you know, it's a place where we meet people where they are. We try to provide an experience or a work environment for everyone. And so we're building a brand new building, a nine-story building. And we're going to put some innovation in there. We're going to do some hoteling, but we have some people that want to have a permanent desk, want to have a permanent home. We'll provide that too. So we try to meet people where they are, so that if you come work here, there's an experience, there's something for you. And that's why it's all about finding the right fit and trying to find out what people value and what they want, right? Like, look, I'm not out competing with Google and Microsoft and all those companies. Right. We're the next tier after that. Look, you've worked at those companies, you've gone and made a ton of money, you've worked the grind, you've done the 90-hour a week. come to a place now where you can take those skills and innovate on your own dime or on your own sort of in the way you want to.
Right.
And bring those innovations to a place and provide your platform and get to tell your story. That's what we get people to do. And I think a lot of people, a lot of talent we've gotten, they've enjoyed that. They've come and enjoyed the more, the slower pace,
right.
And still being able to innovate and do some things, but having a little bit of a calmer pace to the workday. So yeah. So that's how we do it. Telling the story and getting out there, telling our brand and the rest of it, we just let it work.
I love it. I love it. You know, a lot of, you know, executives that, you know, I host on Ivy Podcast is, you know, a lot of them get that, the value of that, being able to get out there and get the message, you know, about themselves as an executive, about the leadership style, about the organization, the brand, it's all about. Because sometimes when I, you know, when I talk to other side of the executives, it's the questions that I get, well, you know, why should I, you know, participate in the podcast or something like this? And it's, you know, usually that's what I get at. It's really, you know, your opportunity to also, you know, get the message out there and attract the top talent and really, you know, because you can't really read that, you know, in the company description of the, you know, about us. It's, exactly. You know, it's all text. It's when you actually hear that directly from, you know, from the source, I think that's completely different. And it's, while you were giving some of those examples, I actually looked up some of your Google reviews and it's like, it's, wow, it's impressive. You guys have close to like 7,000 Google reviews and all of them almost 5 stars. That's super impressive.
And that's the thing, right? Like most people would have never, now maybe people want to travel to Tampa. We have some of the top rated beaches in the country in this area, you know? So it's very interesting. And just to give you a tidbit of that, right? So as part of our SIM chapter, the global CIO for PricewaterhouseCoopers is a member of the chapter, right? Oh. Now, our organization is very different. He's got thousands of people. He's on a plane. He's got Microsoft and all these people as customers, you know, right? You know, we're a smaller shop and, you know, I'm just serving my 23 million passengers a year, you know, partnering with other airports, working with the government, obviously TSA, FBI, all those other people, right? So it's interesting. We're having a conversation and we didn't have been in the airport and we're doing a tour. Most people have never toured an airport, right? Just me and everybody see the inner workings. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about one of the projects we're doing, one of the highly innovative projects of using GIS mapping tools to map our airfield assets.
Wow.
We connect that to basically what we call a work management system. Essentially, if you think of a ServiceNow, those kind of things, but it's one that's a little bit more specialized. Mm-hmm. That connects to our GIS system. And what we did is we automated that and digitized that system for our FAA inspections. So the FAA, what they used to do, they come down and they have these huge binders. Mm-hmm. And they go through the binders and say, okay, this airfield light, because airfield lights, we have to go down to airfield lights and things like that to be in regulatory compliance.
Oh, wow.
A light can only be out for certain periods of time. Now, you want lights on when you land, right? So they used to look at these binders for the service records. We've now digitized all of that, right? So I'm talking to this guy, you know, global CIO for PricewaterhouseCoopers. He's like, I never knew such a system existed. So think about it. Think about this guy, one of the largest companies in the world, global. And I have this GIS system that we're doing all this cool stuff with. And he didn't even know that was a thing. Uh-huh. So he would have never known that had we not had that exposure and I not told that story. Right. Wow. So, you know, when I hear executives say, well, why should I do a podcast? Why should I jump on this? You know, what they're doing in that regard is they're making it about them. Like, hey, I'm this, you know, executive that works for this company, John. Why should I be in your podcast? That's only going to help you. But no, it's going to help your organization. Because, yeah, think about it. Most organizations don't lead with their IT group. You know, you don't go to like, you know, Deloitte and Touche to say, hey, click here to learn about our IT team. So, you know, so you have to get out and tell those stories and be the advocate. Because most companies aren't IT companies. Most companies are regular companies that use technology as a function. Sure. You have to make it part of the business and tell that story to bring that talent in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more with you on that. And it's, you know, you give a perfect example of, you know, how you collaborate, you know, at, you know, with associations that, you know, you're heavily involved with. And that definitely helps in the sense that, you know, you probably don't see immediate results, but if you do that, you know, consistently, that definitely contributes to kind of building that right brand image of the organization, the leadership that's part of that. So that's really cool. I, you know, I love stories like that. What are some of the most challenging or the most in-demand skill sets for you and for your industry to find, especially in this current market? How do you guys go about actually, you know, attracting that type of skill set?
So obviously information security is one, and it's we know about the growing gap there in terms of the amount of jobs that are available versus the amount of available talent. So that's definitely number one. Number two, for the sort of I would call the new jobs in IT or the changing jobs in IT.
Yeah.
When you're talking about going from the traditional sysadmin role to more cloud architects and different things like that are really where the industry is going and where things are trending. Having people that have AI experience,
right,
have people that have RPA experience, those skills are very much hard to find. And if you do find someone, they command a pretty high salary because the skills are sparse. And there's a lot of companies looking for that right now.
Definitely.
And what I feel like, just like anything on a curve of adoption, you have people that are at the front, you have, the early adopters, and then you have like laggards, you have people in the middle and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The thing about it is, I feel like IT is going through our sort of industrial revolution at this point. If you want to call it the fourth industrial revolution, and you want to use the term that I referenced Andrew Yang earlier, if you want to use the term that he uses, but I look at it a little bit differently. He puts it more towards the fact that robots are automation is going to kill a lot of jobs and all these other things. People have to reinvent themselves.
Right.
I'm talking about the same thing, but in a little bit of a different way. The industry has already moved forward in a lot of cases. And what's happened is the industry has commoditized itself. Mm-hmm. But what you have is you have a lot of especially in the operational role, a lot of sysadmins, a lot of people in that role that haven't wanted to change. They still feel like, hey, racking servers and setting up systems and all that stuff, that's still very much needed. In some cases, hey, I should be an Exchange admin, Those things are not like Exchange admin on your resume right now. That's what you're leading with. You're not gonna be in demand in the market.
Yeah.
So finding people that have the new job titles, because with IT, we don't standardize anything in this industry. So at one company, a job title may be one thing, another company something else. So you don't know what the skill sets are. Yeah. So truthfully, having people's titles match what that new thing is, I haven't seen that in a sort of large scale change where it's like, oh yes, this person definitely has skills with, Azure and AWS and all those other things that I need. Mm-hmm. But now it's kind of like, think about Oracle has their own cloud. Yeah. Salesforce has their own cloud. Mm-hmm. AWS has their own cloud. And you can go on and on. You can list 50 different cloud companies.
Yeah.
The stacks are a little bit different. The skill sets are a little bit different. So I don't necessarily, I can't find someone that has the mix of all the clouds that I have because the clouds are very specific to me.
Right.
So that's why when I talked about earlier about finding people that are problem solvers, they have the skills.
Yeah.
Hey, you worked with a cloud before.
Mm-hmm.
I have to kind of just accept that and find out if they're a good learner and can pick things up. Because we're in this weird commoditization mode where the old style people are trying to figure out what their new job is.
Yeah, right.
And the last thing on that, the scary part is, think about it, everybody now grows up with technology. My daughter, she's 3. She's been using an iPad, for a year and some change now. And she clicks on it. She moves things around. She knows how to get to applications and switch and all that other stuff.
Right.
These people now coming along have these innate technical skills. And guess what they can do? They can use an interface in a cloud system and set things up pretty easily. It's not, you're not setting up storage arrays like you were before. That skill set is needed in some regards in some places, but it's changed. You need now people that can interact with the business, have some of that business analysis skill set, and then be able to apply that to a technical system that's already a platform that's already kind of built for you, and then you just work within it. That's different than, hey, I'm a sysadmin, I built this server, look at this data center I set up kind of skill set.
Uh-huh.
So it's hard to find that because a lot of the people's backgrounds on the resumes that can do that job don't have IT in them. So, just mixing, just that mix and that kind of transition that we're going through right now is what's made it more difficult. But obviously cybersecurity for obvious reasons too.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I would imagine that's, you know, the forefront in terms of the most in-demand skill set. And I like what you're saying in terms of, you know, not so much focusing on their past experience and number of years that they had accumulated, but versus, you know, their ability to, you know, to adapt, you know, willingness to learn. You know, I think I couldn't agree more with you from that standpoint, that being a lot more important than just the number of years of experience. So that's very cool. Marcus, last but not least, what are you currently reading, or what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Well, so I'm currently reading The Phoenix Project, and you know, it's I'm a little bit late to reading that. A lot of people have read it and have been recommending it for years, so I finally got around to reading it. Right. And you know, it's pretty good so far. Obviously we're you know, I'm agile trained and all these other things, and, mm-hmm. and it's something we're looking at, and obviously that's a, you know, big movement in the industry. So that book is actually pretty interesting. It's very well written. Mm-hmm. And one book I always recommend is the Start with the Why, I believe is what it's called. Yeah. And the reason for that is that's very central to my core. Like why are we doing something? You know, what problems are we trying to solve? Why did this problem happen? You know, you have to start with a question when something comes in. You have, you know, my wife always tells me that it's never a simple answer with you. you always answer a question with a question, right? Because I need to get clarity around the request, and I need to get context, and I'll leave people with that.
No doubt.
You know, you have to understand where someone is coming from. That's why I met with everybody in leadership as much as I could, mm-hmm. to get their idea and their vision. And what you learn is there's a lot of competing things in IT and you know, just in the organization in terms of what people see the organization vision is from their perspective.
Right.
So how do you bring that together into a cohesive thing? Mm-hmm. Sometimes IT is caught in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so if you start with the why, hey, well, why do you want to do that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the example I always give people is, if someone came to you and said, hey, look, man, I want to put clown hats all throughout the airport. Do you just do it? Or do you say, well, why do you want to do that?
Right.
You know, and that's why you're going to ask that question. Sure. So you have to start with that. So that's why I recommend that book, because I think it's a good starting point for people, because ultimately IT people are problem solvers. That's what we are at our core. And that asking that question helps us down the road to that.
I love it. I love these recommendations. Definitely going to make these available in the episode notes. Marcus, can't thank you enough for your time today, all the lent expertise. I know it was a short yet very insightful conversation. I look forward to staying in touch with you and perhaps do another episode in the near future, see how much I've changed and how you guys are dominating the airline industry.
Hey, definitely, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And looking forward to it. And hey, I'll just leave everybody with this. Fly TPA, America's favorite airport.
I love this. I love this. What an ending.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.